Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni Battici.
And I'm Praz.
Praz, it was a divisive week in FPL. Those with Cole Palmer would have thoroughly enjoyed it. Around 300,000 managers, though, did sell the Chelsea man before game week six. So it would have been a very painful watch for them. We were both on wildcard. I didn't own him. I don't think you did either, right?
I didn't either. It was just one of those things where it's always tough to squeeze in a lot of these premiums or semi-premiums, right? And the whole thing was Haaland's fixtures are going to be great. Saka's fixtures are great because he's home to Leicester and then Southampton. It was just hard to fit in Palmer. So well done to all of you that actually managed to do that, whether that was alongside those other two or even instead of. So it was a great week.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it's just four goals. It's one of those sort of once in a season mega hauls that you might get in your team. So for Palmer to come away with those massive, massive points, 25 points. Look, there was a fair few managers out there that captained him as well. He is 44% owned as we record this. Like, Palmer is owned by the masses. But yeah, I struggled to even consider Palmer because I was so big on Bukayo Saka because of the Arsenal fixtures. And we'll speak more about Arsenal later. But to focus on Cole Palmer, what was your kind of top line summary? Like, do you watch that and go, he's now someone we have to beeline for? Or do you look at it and go, keep calm, carry on, trust Saka can outscore him over the next few, and consider the fact that, yes, it's Forest up next at home, which is an okay fixture, but then he plays Liverpool, Newcastle, Man United, Arsenal. It's a tough run for Chelsea.
Yeah, so I think I'm more on the latter camp, which is basically keep calm if you don't have him. Yeah. Look, firstly, to caveat this, I mean, four goals didn't do justice to how much damage he could have done. I mean, there was the one-on-one where he hit the post. There was the one-on-one in the second half where he missed, which is completely out, you know, not him. And then he had the disallowed goal where he was offside. And obviously the four goals, plus also that really lovely chip to Jackson where yeah. Jackson missed. So look, this could have been a 30 pointer plus. So we have to sort of put that on the side and say, okay, this guy is showing what we knew from last season. And I think the little bit of skepticism early season was, it's a new manager. How will they gel? What is his positioning? What is his minutes? And I think people are getting comfortable with it, but that can be true. But also, you can have the view with the fixtures that you just mentioned. Now, like, I don't think Newcastle and Man United are tough fixtures, but Liverpool and Arsenal are. Mm. So I think the entry point for Palmer, if you don't have him, is clearly game week 12 when Chelsea have a great run. And that's when we'll decide to get him. At least for me now, just wait and hope that he doesn't damage the rank too much.
Yeah, there are cheaper alternatives in that Chelsea midfield. But to focus still on Cole Palmer, like, and this Maresca team, it's worth noting Chelsea absolutely outscoring everyone else. Like, and backing this Chelsea attack seems like a smart move. Like, we expect six game weeks in to see the likes of City, Arsenal, Liverpool all up there, probably above Chelsea in terms of goals scored and big chances. But actually, Chelsea have outscored them all. Chelsea have 15 goals this season. Second is Man City with 14, and then, you know, a group of teams with 12 goals. And then even when we look at those big chances, Chelsea 24 big chances, Man City 19. Only Spurs have had more big chances than Chelsea and no one's had more goals. And backing their best attacker kind of makes sense. And that's obviously Cole Palmer. And when we look at the other attackers, Nico Jackson, sure, we know he's first choice, but he'll always lose some minutes to Nkunku. And then when we look at the others, Sancho and Madueke will probably lose some minutes to Mudryk and Neto as well. So it doesn't feel like you're getting a 90-minute man outside of Cole Palmer, but you pay so much more for that, don't you?
You do, and that's the thing. He, you know, Palmer isn't registered in the European competitions either. So you have full guarantee that he's going to play. He would play regardless, but I think the fact that he will get those minutes, whereas his counterparts like Salah, like Saka, like Haaland will get Champions League minutes, it just means that his overall minutes and production will be higher. And his price is, you know, we thought 10.5, more than Saka, more than Foden. Maybe that's a little expensive. He's proving to be right up there. So, like I said, I think it's a good option. If you don't have him, then nothing has changed. Yes, he was explosive. Of course, 24 points makes you a little bit jittery, but I think nothing has changed. I don't expect Forest to defend the way Brighton did. I mean, that high line was, you know, it was like watching a horror movie. If you don't own any Chelsea attackers, the way they were defending at the halfway line and every single ball, you know, Maresca had told them, just ping the passes, let them run after behind the defense. Doesn't help that Van Heek was injured, Veltman was injured. It just didn't suit them at all. I don't think Nuno will play the same way.
It was kamikaze mode from Hörsler. And we kind of saw, I remember last season, Chelsea played Spurs, I think, and they Postecoglou hadn't been there long. And I think Spurs went down to either 9 or 10 men, and they had this incredible high line that Chelsea kept exploiting. Well, Brighton had 11 men and still didn't work it out that they should change something halfway through the game. And we just saw in behind so often. They played like a front foot team at home, and it was like, you're Brighton going to Stamford Bridge. I'm not saying go and park the bus, keep your philosophy, but it felt a little bit naive. From Hörsler, and that's definitely one to monitor when Brighton go to the big teams, certainly away from home. Maybe they'll be punished more than what we just saw against Chelsea, and maybe that'll be a common theme, or maybe they nip it in the bud early. But we know these managers often like to stick to their principles, so definitely one to monitor for Brighton too.
Absolutely. And a word on their defense, Chelsea's defense, I think it's still taking time. I mean, if you remember when Arteta joined and Pep joined and Klopp joined, they first figured out the mechanics and how the ball is progressed, and the defense just naturally flowed when the rest of the team functioned better. So it wasn't like, you know, you need to fix the defense, a bit like Sean Dyche needs to do with Everton. It's a bit like when the team gets more comfortable in possession, the press, playing out from the back, you just hold the ball better, and then you get become a better defensive unit. And I think that's what will happen with Chelsea eventually. But at the moment, it's a swerve, right, on the defense.
I think it has to be, because there's so many. It's almost like it's unforced errors. Like I feel like we're talking tennis here, but unforced errors from the Chelsea defense are passing out from the back again. It's like Maresca wants a goalkeeper that will be a sweeper keeper and almost become a centre-back in possession. And that then makes the pitch wider, and it gives you an extra man. It means you're then 12 against 11 or 11 against 10 in terms of outfield. And Robert Sanchez doesn't feel like that goalkeeper. In fact, when De Zerbi arrived at Brighton, he also wanted a keeper that could do that. Looked at Sanchez and thought, this isn't the guy. And he sold Sanchez to Chelsea, ironically, who now want a goalkeeper that can do that. And again, Maresca at Leicester, straight away, he bought a goalkeeper that could do that. So I don't know if Sanchez is going to be on borrowed time, but I feel like it's not the perfect fit, but he is still continuing with his methodology, which is, yeah, we'll concede some goals by passing out from the back, but we'll score more. And maybe it's working. But yeah, it does feel like you score two, we'll score three type approach each game, which makes me want to swerve all of their defenders.
Yeah, I mean, look, we will still learn more about Chelsea. And I think, look, another devil's advocate way of looking at it is now they have the tougher games. Let's see how they do against them. You know, like they lost to Man City, which was the first game. Now they did all right in that one. But now they've had time to gel into the Maresca system. Let's see how they do against Liverpool, Arsenal. If they truly put their hand up and say they're a team that we should take more seriously, then yes, we will be paying 10.7, 10.8, whatever Palmer is at that time in game week 12.
Is Sancho someone we should look at, do you reckon? Because I must admit, my first wildcard draft last week had Sancho in it. I just thought he's now first choice, his minutes are going to improve. He's only played a 45, a 56 and a 70. Not many minutes, two starts and one off the bench on 45 minutes in game week 4. But in that time, 4 assists in those 3 games. And the link up with Cole Palmer is clear to see. These guys played, remember, for Man City in the academy. They grew up together. Sancho Palmer is a really nice sort of duo. And you're going to see a lot of Sancho assists for Palmer goals.
I'm open to it. I mean, I think there's a bigger theme in FPL at the moment where there's no midfielders out there that are putting their hand up, apart from Mbeumo, that are less than 9 million and over 6 million, something like that. So I think if you know, it's not like Sancho's competing with 5 other great options right now for 6.5-7 million. There's not a lot out there. So the sensible manager in me will always say, look, there's other players out there that are getting 90 minutes, that are on set pieces, that will probably outperform Sancho, even though they don't look as good on the eye. You know, I'm thinking of players like Eze, and we'll talk about Crystal Palace. But on the other side, yes, there is that temptation that this team is gelling and they're scoring goals and there's this new partnership. So it's that, you know, that sensible versus maverick element. And I'm always, unfortunately, the sensible, and I'll find it hard unless Sancho shows me something more in terms of minutes.
Yeah, okay. I ended up sensible on my wild card, and I kind of wish I'd stuck to my guns with the McNeils and the Sanchos that are in that first draft of mine. But oh well, I might move there. 2.2% owned. He is only 6.4 million. We think of Sancho when he first came back to the Premier League from Dortmund. I think he came in at around 9 million. So he's had huge price drops because his form at Man United has been so bad. But I just wonder if under Maresca, who again, I think he's probably worked with before at Man City, but certainly working with Cole Palmer, this could just be his moment. So one to monitor for sure. But look, Chelsea 1-4-2, Arsenal 1-4-2 as well. We should speak about them, because loads of us wildcarded to get triple Arsenal. And if you went double defence, well, you were kind of punished because they conceded too. But if you went double attack, again, you would have felt like you should have got so much more. I went Havertz and Saka and I was disappointed with just the one return there.
I mean, they were electric. I mean, Saka particularly. Now, it was a very different performance to Palmer in the sense that Saka obviously only got 3 points. But within those 3 points were so many chances. He put it on the plate for Havertz, for Gabriel of that corner. There were so many chances he created. He himself had a few shots. So I think from a Saka owner perspective, the one thing you shouldn't do is panic. Watch those highlights. He could have hauled big time. And the other guy, who I also got on wildcard, and I think you have as well, Havertz, I mean, he clocked almost 2xG, which is basically he was expected to score 2 goals in the game. So this game pretty much went the way we thought it would, you know, basically tripling up on Arsenal, whether it was double attack or double defense. And essentially, managers got a little bit unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, Saka had 7 shots, same as Palmer. And Saka also has had more creativity in the game. You know, he had, I think, 8 key passes, big chances created, I think 4. But yeah, it just wasn't to be. And Havertz, as you said, nearly 2xG, that was the highest of the game week. No player clocked a higher xG than Havertz. So when we look at Arsenal attack, they've just played Leicester at home. They play Southampton at home next. Arguably, the Southampton defence is even weaker. Do we look at Arsenal as a legit captaincy option this week? I mean, we'll speak more about captaincy later maybe, but I feel like we should address it now when we're talking about Arsenal and how their attacking numbers were so good, their underlying data especially, at the weekend. Should we consider them for captaincy in game week 7, or is it just a case of Haaland plays middling team at home? Obvious.
Look, I think Saka or even Havertz is probably the second best choice after Haaland. And we'll talk about City in a second because obviously we're coming off a Haaland blank. But I think, you know, there was these concerns. If Odegaard is out, will their attacking unit gel? They were creating chances for fun. You know, it always also is about the opposition. When you have opposition like a Leicester, like a Southampton, they just can't cope with the press. They can't cope with the speed at which they attack. And ultimately, Arsenal also have this set piece threat, which is unique, right? I mean, no other team has this, where every time they have a corner, FPL managers are sitting up from their sofa and watching, when is Gabriel getting his head on the ball? When is Havertz getting his head on the ball? Because that's just how much they create from set pieces. So there's so many routes to points with a Saka and a Havertz. And Havertz, I say, because he's always up there for corners as well. He is the central man. Like, you know, you had Trossard and Martinelli playing alongside, and we'll talk about those two as well. But it's not the case that he's playing the Odegaard role. It's completely different. It's almost like him and Trossard are interchanging. They're almost playing like a two up top. And so I'm not worried at all. And Havertz becomes a great option regardless.
That set piece threat is unbelievable. With Saka's delivery as pinpoint as it is, but when you look at the tall guys in the team, like Kai Havertz, Declan Rice is in the box, but obviously the two centre-backs, but now you add Calafiori into the mix, it's like they've got another centre-back. And again, he had, I think, 3 attempts at goal from set pieces at the weekend. So it's like, if the main men are marking Gabriel and Saliba, who's marking Calafiori? Like, he's probably got someone, you know, nowhere near as good in the air on him. So definitely one to monitor moving forward still with that Arsenal set piece threat. What do you make of the Arsenal defence, Praz? Because we both went double Arsenal attack on wildcard, but the masses went a combination of Raya and Gabriel or Gabriel and Saliba. A lot went double Arsenal defence.
So I think there was a long-term / short-term play there. Because I think long-term, you want double Arsenal defense because they've shown themselves to be the best defensive team in the league over the last season and this one. And so I think some people just said, look, yes, there were some doubts over Raya over midweek, but they just said, look, long-term, I want Raya in goal. And so I'm going to go double defense. I understand it. Of course, conceding 2 to Leicester wasn't in the plan. But some others, like the two of us, we said, look, you don't play Leicester at home, Southampton at home, you know, you only play them once a season and you get them consecutively. You have to get 2 attackers to attack those 2 fixtures. And I also get that because there are lots of routes to good strikers where you can go with Havertz after these 2 fixtures. You can go to a Solanke, a Jackson, a Watkins. So there were lots of options. And I think that's where we ended up going, you and I, and maybe keep Havertz is also a plan. But for me particularly, I think, you know, you can move him on after a couple of weeks and then get back to the double Arsenal defense eventually.
Yeah, I think that's my plan. I still think I'll end up buying Raya in a month or so. There was one other story at the Emirates that's worth noting. It's really interesting because Premier League footballers do play FPL. A lot of them do. James Justin's one of the better Premier League players that plays FPL. He's had top 10K finishes. He's clearly really into it. I think he must be watching content creators, Praz, because he wildcarded game week 6. And when you look at his wildcard team, it's really good. He's got like Semenyo and Rodgers and Bermo, Rico Lewis, Solanke. He always picks himself, but knowing he was going to the Emirates, he decided to bench himself. He also picked Raya and Gabriel. So when he scored that first goal, or even he gets his brace, not only does James Justin Hall, which is bench points and pain for him, he's also wiping out his double Arsenal clean sheet. Unbelievable story that from a player, isn't it?
What a story. And he's a great FPL manager. We monitor his team a lot. But yeah, this story of him wiping out the clean sheet for his double defense, amazing. It's always lovely to see FPL being part of the conversation in mainstream football, and some footballers actually take it quite seriously. So it's lovely to see.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, let's move on to Newcastle 1, Man City 1. I think many of us were surprised here. We thought Man City would have a lot more chances. And when we look at the total XG number from the game, Newcastle actually slightly outweighed Man City in terms of chance creation and shot volume and XG. And with that in mind, we saw a Haaland blank. This is the first time this season he has blanked. Many went there for captaincy on Haaland. It just wasn't his day, but Man City looked slightly off it in terms of the attacking dynamic. Didn't quite click, did it?
It's the curse of the early kickoff. You know what they say in football? Of course, I'm kidding. But look, I think it was going to happen, right? I mean, they had a good start. Haaland was pretty much everything he was touching was turning to gold. It was going to happen. He still had 5 attempts. And away to Newcastle traditionally has been a difficult game. Of course, our view of Newcastle has changed a little bit in terms of their defensive prowess because they have been quite leaky. So, you know, a lot of us even doubled up, tripled up. I had a triple up of Man City. It didn't work out, but that's fine because a lot of managers who picked Man City players wanted to do so for actually the fixtures after this. They're home to Fulham, they're home to Southampton very soon as well, away to Wolves. So very good fixture. So I think, number one, it was a tough game. Man City weren't up to it, and actually Newcastle performed really well. You know, I actually think Eddie Howe almost looked at the way Arsenal defended and said, okay, we can do the same thing. You know, we have the players to do the same thing. And so a lot of them were just, you know, low block, shutting them down, both on the wings and through the central spaces. And I think it kind of worked. Now, not every team can do that. Newcastle have some really good midfielders, and on their day, they showed up.
Yeah, it was a bit like when Eddie Howe first took over at Newcastle, we saw really tight defences and lots of clean sheets. Now they obviously conceded one to Man City, but it looked a lot tighter at the back, which they haven't done early in the season. It was the reason I was very happy back in Newcastle defence pre-season. And maybe that's a theme to continue where we'll look at it and go, actually, Eddie Howe is resorting to type. And the likes of Trippier again now starting could be positive for FPL. What did you make of the back line though? Because we saw Akanji at times stepping into midfield. We saw Rico Lewis starting as a midfielder, not an inverted fullback. And we saw Gvardiol back to the kind of left back he was at the end of last season, where he's given complete license to get on the ball high up the pitch. And when he does that, he finds ways to just get shots off. And he keeps finding these bottom corners, left foot, right foot. He's a really good finisher, Gvardiol, and he's got these light twinkle toes feet, which you just don't expect from a big, you know, traditional centre-back, which if you ask many in his home country of Croatia, they'd say his best position is as a centre-back where he plays for the national team.
Yeah, look, I think Man City are trying to find ways to get their players in the central areas without Rodri, because you lose Rodri, you've lost like 1.5 player, right? Because he does so much. So they're trying to find solutions. And I think what Pep has done in this week was actually something we haven't seen in the past, which is basically you have 3 defenders inverting. Well, Rico Lewis wasn't starting as a defender, but you had Rico Lewis taking some, you know, almost like an 8, sometimes even a 10. So that was very good to see as a Rico Lewis owner. Now, even though he did that, he didn't have too much attacking threat. Like he had, you know, fewer touches in the final third than any of the City's back 4. But having said that, he was still taking good attacking positions. I think Gvardiol was a little bit of a hybrid position. So, you know, back end of last season, we were seeing him. He was basically underlapping, overlapping all the time. He was the outlet on the left. I think this game, he was also a third centre-back at times when Walker was heading. And when Walker wasn't going ahead, then he was basically taking a lot of attacking positions. So it was a little bit of a hybrid role. But like you said, he does that really, really well. And if he continues to do that, he does become part of the conversation. He actually had a price drop the week leading up to this game week.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the wide men for City, you never quite know with Pep, but he's got his direct wingers that he'll use in some games, and he's got his wide men that he'll opt for more control where it's more possession based. And he went for that approach against Newcastle. He started Grealish and Bernardo Silva rather than a Savio or a Doku. But unfortunately for me, it does make those players all a bit of an FPL non-event, despite their price points playing for a City attack. And Savio was someone I was really tempted on a wild card, and I didn't go there in the end just because I couldn't guarantee start. I do think he'll start more games than he doesn't, and I do think he could be a good option in his price band. But the risk of minutes is just a real dilemma for those that want to invest in the Man City midfield. I guess once Foden's up and running and De Bruyne's back fit, maybe they become options. But the budget mids in Man City's 11 or squad are kind of swerves, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a bit like the Sancho conversation we had. Now, with Sancho, he will probably start most games, but get the early subs. But here, you have a case where they may not even start every game, get early subs, and ultimately they're playing for a team that is funneling all their chances to one guy who's their striker. So you're not going to get a lot of XG as well. So I think it's a swerve for me. And I think you raised a great point. I mean, Foden didn't start again. He had the press conference again yesterday, and he was saying all the nice things about Foden. Yes, he's back. He'll be playing. He's important to us. I want to see it first, a bit like Palmer. And sometimes when you do that, you're late to the party. But I'd rather be a little late than actually be burnt by spending 9.5 million or 9.3 million on Foden. Because what's going to happen is, let's say he starts Fulham over this weekend. You have the international break, then De Bruyne is apparently back. And then suddenly we've seen that he wants to play Foden through the middle, De Bruyne through the middle, Gundogan through the middle. Kovacic will always be needed there because of the cover for Rodri. It's just difficult to pick a Man City attacker these days apart from Haaland.
Yeah, and if Bernardo Silva's not playing on the right, then he's in the 11 a lot of the time in central areas as well. Now Gundogan's been added back to that squad. Remember, no one's really been sold, so Gundogan's come in as an extra body. It's even more competition for places. And yeah, those wide men, I don't mind the guys that get early subbed if they're getting points and we know they're starting. So I think of like Brennan Johnson, Luis Diaz, Jadon Sancho, like all around that 6.5 million price point, Luis Diaz a bit more. But we feel like 80, 90% of the time they're going to start football matches. So if they get their 70 minutes, you go, that's fine because they're playing well, team scoring loads of goals, and they're getting chances. But with the Man City wide men, similar price point, but we just can't. It's like, oh, they're going to start 30, 40, 50% of the games, and there's just no guarantee. It's just too risky.
Agreed.
What did you make of the Newcastle attack? Because Gordon played in the more central areas, number nine. He was on pens. Yeah. One I sold on wildcard, and I don't regret that. I was never going to pick Gordon moving forward, but he now goes to Everton away, Goodison Park, probably playing the same position. Like, Isak's likely out game week 7. We'll know more as the week goes on, but Gordon out of position on pens, playing against his old team, one to get excited about for owners, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if FPL was a weekly game, I think Gordon would be in the shout, but the problem just is that you don't want him long term. Isak will be back after the international break, if not sooner. So yeah, I think it's a nice narrative, but I don't, you know, I actually still prefer Gordon off the left. Like, I'd rather have Gordon off the left, running into the right-sided defender, taking him on, taking a shot, rather than playing central where he has to hold up the ball. And it's actually Murphy. Murphy looked very threatening on the right. And Harvey Barnes, who basically play off him. So yes, he got the pen. But I think open play, I'd rather him playing off the left anyway.
Yeah, and when Isak's fit, there's a chance Gordon doesn't get the left-hand slot. If Barnes is playing really well, it's Gordon out on the right, as we saw in some of the early game weeks this season, which, as an owner, I think both you and I were on him. We were like, oh yeah, we do want to see him on the left. He's so much more threatening on that left-hand side. Another player we both own, Praz, and I think we both dropped him on wildcard. And I know, like me, you were really keen to keep him, and it was probably one of those last minute decisions to sell. But we both dropped our boy Ollie Watkins, who of course continued to score, and we knew that would happen, didn't we? It was just, how big will his scoring be, and is there better options? I'm disappointed because I might end up going back there really soon, and it was an error of judgment, because against Ipswich, I feel like there was always goals for Ollie Watkins. How do you feel about it?
I mean, look, you make peace with it. Like, he was very close to my draft. Up until actually 15 minutes to deadline, I was I was debating Raya draft with Watkins or my non-Raya draft with Havertz. And I went with the latter. Now, look, Havertz got 6 points. So it's not like it's a complete disaster. And I'm happy to have Havertz this week. So it was always going to be this or that, right? And Solanke did well as well. So yes, Watkins did well, but some of his competitors in that slot also did well this week. I just thought, look, with the Champions League, with all the other priorities? Will he get the minutes? And actually, this game, Villa disappointed. Like, from an FPL point of view, we have huge regret because some people benched Rodgers, some people didn't have Ollie Watkins. And so there was huge regret. But if you look at it from Unai Emery's point of view, he must have come out from this game and saying, what was this? Like 0.15 expected goals in the second half when they were chasing the game is just not good enough. That's the other side of thinking about it.
Yeah, Ipswich were arguably the better team. They certainly deserved the equaliser, but some would say they deserve to win. I'm glad you've made peace with the Ollie Watkins call. I clearly haven't. Mine wasn't between Watkins and Havertz in the end. Mine was a variation of, do I go with Luis Diaz or do I go Ollie Watkins? If I'd gone Ollie Watkins, it was Rodgers starting. And if I had gone Diaz, it was DCL. So it was a big, big swing there for me. But it is what it is, as the kids say. And maybe Watkins will be back in my team. I just, every time I watch Villa, I just know he's their main man. And I think even with Champions League, he's just a fitness beast. He's a minutes monster. He's going to always be starting football matches, even when he's at sort of 80, 90%. And when he starts football matches, he scores goals. As we saw last year, we forget, Ollie Watkins outscored Erling Haaland last season. That's not going to happen this year, but he's going to get huge points once again. And I think he's criminally underlooked. But look, it was Ipswich that really caught the eye, as you say, in the second half especially. Two performers for me, obviously Delap for the goals. He didn't do much else other than the goals. I think 8 passes and only 4 were accurate passes, but he scored 2 goals, got max bonus Highland points. Yeah, exactly. That's all you need to do. Proper number 9 performance. But Leif Davis as well. Like, I think he had 11 attempted crosses, 7 key passes, 3 big chances created. We've not seen Leif Davis, his championship numbers translate to Premier League yet in terms of all those assists he got last season. But it feels like they're coming because when you look at his average position map and everything, his average position map on the left-hand side was almost equal to Amari Hutchinson's on the centre-right and Leif Davis centre-left. They're both like number 10s. They're the chief creators in that team. And he's a left-back, listed as a defender, 4.5 million. Definitely one to consider moving forward, isn't he?
He is, yeah. I mean, now Ipswich have now, not lost the last 4 games. So that's they're building up some momentum. Now, they're not winning games. They're not keeping clean sheets as much as they'd like. Mm. But I think it's a team to watch. Their fixtures are great for the medium term. So it's not like you have to jump now. You can wait a couple of weeks. You can watch. But I think it was clear from preseason that Leif Davis is basically our new Doughty. Now, if Ipswich turn out to be a better team in the Premier League compared to the Lutons, then yeah, he becomes an option. But if they keep conceding every single game and you're having to rely on attacking returns, then there are other competitors for the same price. So it's a little bit still for me, wait and watch. But I am noticing, if you finish a game conceding 2 goals and still end up on a bonus point as a defender, there's something you're doing very well in the FPL system and generally. And yeah, Leif Davis is, I think for me, the most interesting Ipswich pick. I mean, of course, Delap is there, but then he also competes with other great strikers. For 4.5, if you're getting those attacking numbers, yes, definitely want to notice.
Yeah, I remember last season, it was like, oh, I'm not going there for Doughty because he plays for Luton, they're conceding loads. And you could say similar for Davis, but at some point when the fixture runs good, you jump on a Doughty. I remember doing it last season once or twice, and I can see myself doing it with Davis. Very similar sort of prospect there. Wolves versus Liverpool. We all own a Liverpool player or two. I thought Mo Salah had one of his worst games, probably his worst game this season, but he still missed an open goal. He still could have had a really easy assist. I think it was for Jones on the counter late. He just didn't find the pass. And he scores a penalty and comes away with 10 points. There's very few players in this game that can compete with Mo Salah for having a poor performance, but always coming home with FPL hauls. He just finds routes to points, doesn't he?
He's FPL royalty for a reason. I mean, yeah, he's... What can you say? When you play 90 minutes and you're the main man, then you will be involved in things. And he's great from that point of view. But then you have to talk about the fact that he is more than 2 million more than a Palmer, 2.5 million more than a Saka. So you have to have these conversations now on when Liverpool's fixtures turn. And I think after Palace, they do turn. Is he worth it? Even if he continues to score the 6 to 10 points on a regular basis, is he worth it? Are you going to captain him? Those conversations will need to be had. But otherwise, I think if you had Salah this week, a lot of people I saw captained him as well because the non-Haaland owners had Salah, Palmer, Saka. So they had a great week. And I think Salah was great. I mean, the disappointment was Luis Diaz. There was a big pull to go for Diaz because of his performances, the couple of braces. And, there was a feeling that after the midweek rest, maybe the minutes will be up as well. Disappointed for me, right?
Yeah, like we felt like a start was a banker because we had seen him rested midweek. For me, what really made me want to buy Diaz over Watkins in the end was just the news of the Wolves' injuries and the illness in the camp. And it was like, oh, there's teenagers that haven't played before in the squad. It was just that narrative of, oh, Liverpool are going to come here and put up a big number. And if you're not on their best attacking player so far this season, it could get scary. But it didn't quite happen. And Wolves started the game really well. And 2-1 felt fair, but Liverpool never really ran riot as we expected. And now we go into another game with Luis Diaz. Well, we think he'll start, but there's no guarantee. I did always feel like it was going to be a short-term option on Luis Diaz and probably a transfer out waiting to happen. You want to be on him when he's hot, but knowing he's not a 90-minute man, knowing Gakpo is playing so well when he does come in, it's a slight concern. Like, you could argue, a couple of weeks ago, we saw Liverpool's biggest game of the season so far going to AC Milan. Going to Milan, Champions League opening game, and he went Gakpo over Diaz, and Gakpo played really well. I'm not saying Gakpo's first choice, but he's not scared to drop Diaz. And it's slightly worrying as an owner that there's no guarantee there of starts. We don't mind the early subs because we know we're getting that. We know what we're buying into. But we are going to mind if he doesn't start football matches. And maybe if Gakpo keeps performing well in the midweek games, he'll get some Premier League starts very soon.
Yeah, and it's the dreaded early kickoff again, you know, with the, like I talked about with Man City. So we'll see how they do against Palace. I mean, one guy, again, I think, I'm not sure if you had him, but Jota, many people had
Jota
him before the wild card. He then comes out, scores a brace in the Carabao Cup, gets a couple of assists in this game. It's just frustrating. I mean, this is where an FPL basically makes you pull your hair out, where you want to go for the double Liverpool attack when they have the great fixtures. Jota gets the 59th minute subs, gets the blanks. Then you switch to Diaz. Diaz gets the blank. But that's FPL. So, you know, we love it anyway. But what I did want to discuss with you, Gianni, is actually their defense, because a lot of people, when they think about Liverpool, they think about, you know, the Klopp style, the gung-ho style, a bit like what Chelsea are at the moment, where they think of, you know, the Liverpool being similar to Chelsea. But actually, now fixtures play a big part in this. But if you look at their defensive data, they are by far the best defense so far this season. And they have the most attacking defender in the league in their team as well. But in this game, Robertson was more advanced than Trent. What did you make of Robbo versus Trent in this?
Yeah, and he was on some of the corners as well. And I always think when Robertson is sharing set pieces, it makes him a much better FPL option, because that's the extra quality Trent can often bring you. It's that set piece threat. But if Robertson's going to take some of the corners, then he's definitely worth noting. Of course, you save a million-ish. And Liverpool clean sheets are really good. They've kept more clean sheets than everyone, but they've also conceded only 2 goals this season. Like, that's so good. Like, Man City have conceded 6. Aston Villa have conceded 9. You know, Liverpool have conceded 2 goals and they're keeping clean sheets for fun. Their expected goals conceded is better than everyone else's. They're outperforming teams like Arsenal, who are the best defence historically in the league. So Liverpool, I'm very happy owning Trent. And I think most of the time he'll be more dangerous than Robertson. But by just the way it went against Wolves, a lot was down the left-hand side and Robertson was slightly more dangerous. But there's still an argument to double up on that Liverpool defence. Many won't want to do that now because they're about to have some tough fixtures. But I feel like this team are going to keep clean sheets in some of those tough games and have some ugly 1-0 wins. I think Slot's got a little bit about him in that respect. Not, as you say, the Jurgen Klopp rock and roll football where we'll go and outscore you. We're going to see always more control, more possession. We might see fewer goals, but we're going to see more clean sheets.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Like, you know, there's a bigger point, and I'm sure the guys will cover it in the main pod, which is basically a lot of people are thinking, let's just sell Trent and let's fund that Trent downgrade and then get a Palmer now. And, you know, there's a lot of knee-jerking happening based on what happened last week. But I classify Trent as a premium pick. Like, because of his price and because of what his potential is, I classify him as somebody who can get 200 points this year. So I'm really uncomfortable looking at these discussions. Okay, you can do it for a little while, like people are not going double Arsenal defense. You can sell him for a little while. But you need to think about a long-term structure. And for me, a long-term structure has Trent in it. And so therefore, I think when the numbers point to this, where he's the most attacking defender, playing for the best defense at the moment, it's just, I just can't see people's, you know, how people are selling or thinking of selling Trent.
It's a no-brainer. Like, I was shocked to see so many on wildcards selling Trent to find money elsewhere. I went into the wildcard saying there were 3 must-have picks for me and nothing has changed. It's still Haaland, Trent, and Morgan Rogers, because I just don't think there's a better value midfielder in the game. They right. were three absolute no-brainers, and that's still the case. And I can see that running for a very long time in my team. So yeah, Trent, yeah, easy money. I'd pay definitely an extra 0.5, maybe even an extra million for Trent right here, right now. He's that good.
Can we skip the next section, Gianni? Or do we have to talk about Man United Spurs?
Oh, we have to touch on it. The Man United performances have been as bad as mine in FPL this season, mate. I've had red arrow after red arrow, and it feels like Ten Hag has had the same. What did you make of it? Even before the Bruno red card, it was a one-sided affair.
I mean, it was embarrassing. If I can be a little bit brutal about my own team that I support, the team didn't start out right. Spurs were completely all over. I mean, this is a game at Old Trafford, and it felt like it could have been 2-0 or 3-0 before the 20th minute. So any narrative that says that, you know, that the game was decided by the red card, far off it. It was, you know, Spurs were great. That Van de Ven assist, I mean, what a ridiculous run for that assist. And looks, you know, one thing we know about Spurs, when we were talking about Chelsea and you shared some numbers, there is only one team, like you mentioned, that have more big chances created than Chelsea, that is Spurs. And they completely outran us. They outshot us. And it was a very difficult game to watch as a Man United fan.
Yeah, and Solanke with his goal, we know now he's up and running. He'll be definitely someone to jump on very soon. And you and I own Kai Havertz, and there's a clear and obvious route from Havertz to Solanke.
Yeah.
But there's also midfielders at Spurs. You know, I look at Brennan Johnson, and yes, he might not be a 90-minute man, but he's shooting on sight. His numbers are really good. And then I look at Kulusevski, similar amount of minutes this season as Brennan, and playing a slightly different role, Kulusevski. Him and Maddison are almost playing like dual number 8-10s with a Bentancourt in midfield. So that's a really attacking midfield three, but Kulusevski's getting in these advanced positions, and he's playing really well in these central areas. I've never seen Kulu as an out and out wide man, and I feel like he's always more comfortable in those inside forward positions, and he's playing really well. So both worth monitoring, Brennan and Kulu. Who'd you prefer out of those two, Praz?
I prefer Brennan just for the attacking threat, because the way Spurs are drilled to function is basically attack the width, come into the box and just cross. You know, I saw this training video that was going around yesterday where they were telling, the other-sided attacker, so it was Werner or Johnson, that just cross. You don't even need to look up, because there will be somebody on the far post always.
Yeah.
And so that's what Johnson's doing. Johnson will always be there on the far post. This is why his XG numbers will be through the roof, because he's getting these chances very close to goal, where he's, you know, not a tap-in, but you're very close and you know exactly what you need to do when the ball comes with you know, a lot of pace towards you. You're there in the same position every single moment. So I like Brennan for the goal threat and the potential and the fact that there's no other midfielders, right? I mean,
yeah.
Kulusevski, yes, he's doing really well, but he's doing better as a football pick than an FPL pick, I feel. Brennan might be doing worse as a football pick, but better as an FPL pick. And we want FPL points. So I'm on Brennan Johnson if I go there.
Yeah, and well done, Praz, for mentioning the surname of Johnson. We both refer to him as Brennan so often because there's other Johnsons in the league. We're not on first name terms with Brennan Johnson. We don't know him personally. But yeah, I'm always referring to him as Brennan because there's Ben Johnson and other Johnsons in the Premier League. Other teams of note this weekend, Praz. It was nice as a neutral to see Everton win because they've been involved in some close games and they keep losing. And this was a close game in which they won. And it was a game separated by clear and utter brilliance from McNeil. Like, what a finish that was in the top corner.
Yeah, and that game, Palace were actually playing really well in the first half. So the proverbial game of two halves, where Palace absolutely had full control in the first half. Second half, they completely lost it. And then obviously one goal and Everton came back in and they just didn't let in. So I think it's good for Everton, but very worrying for Palace. They haven't won a league game this season after the end of year they had last year. So we'll see where that team goes, but Everton, good signs.
We didn't go McNeil on wildcard, but we both went Semenyo and I think we both went Mbeumo, right? Mm-hmm. Both really good picks moving forward, aren't they?
Yeah, they, for different reasons. I think Mbeumo, great as a, you know, I call him a mini Saka because he's also on pens, he's also on set pieces and plays 90 minutes. So very, very good pick. I think with Semenyo, for me, it's a little bit more short term where he had two great fixtures again against promoted teams. And he looks so threatening. I mean, I enjoyed Monday night. Always lovely owning a player on Monday night football, isn't it? Like watching your player as the only guy who's left, like nobody else can ruin your rank. And watching him was was really nice. Bournemouth are a good team this year. I'm really interested in their players. They go on a tougher run again after the next game week. So from game week 8 onwards, I think I'll be getting their players after their tougher run again.
Do you know what? Bournemouth feel like a team to me that when they're playing lower opposition, middling or lower opposition to them, they'll completely dominate them. Yet when they play the big teams, they'll probably see some big defeats because they go toe-to-toe with you. So they went to Anfield a couple of games ago and they went toe-to-toe with Liverpool and they lost, I think it was 3-0. But then they'll go and completely dominate a Southampton. And at game week 7, it's Leicester. And I expect, again, a really dominant display. Although it is Leicester away, it's not at home. But Definitely one to monitor when the fixtures are good. And as you say, they do have a good run coming up. They've got some tricky games from 8, 9, 10. But then from 11 onwards, it's just a sea of green in terms of fixtures. I could even consider two Bournemouth attackers for that run because I think they'll score goals.
Yeah. I mean, they're all cheap and it's a good team. I mean, speaking of teams that did not do well, Southampton, they were terrible against last night. They're playing Arsenal. So you teased it at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Are you at all tempted by a Saka or Havertz captain over a Haaland captain?
I'm tempted, but I'm worried of the ownership of Haaland, and I'm worried that I'm already having a bad couple of weeks and this could be an emotional reaction of just going, I need to do something different. I don't want to do something different for the sake of it. I want to pick the guy who's going to get most points. And I think my heart and my gut still says that is Erling Haaland for captaincy, but I am tempted on Kai Havertz. I just love those XG numbers from game week 6. I think he could do very similar numbers game week 7, which will convert to more actual FPL points. And I think the fixture is better for Arsenal, but it's Erling Haaland and we know what he does at home against middling opposition. So I'm tempted on Havertz more so than Saka. I also like the fact Arsenal in Europe this week on Tuesday, they're at home. Man City travel, they've got an away game. So it's effectively a day's less prep because of the travel. So I'll monitor it in the week and I'll go for a call later in the week. But yeah, I'd say I'm probably 60-40 on Haaland.
Good segue there with the midweek football. So there is another busy midweek of football. Like Gianni said, Newcastle will finally play their postponed League Cup match against Wimbledon. Meanwhile, Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Villa play the Champions League games. Spurs and Man United and Chelsea play their other European competitions. It's probably time to be patient. Hold those transfers again until the midweek games are completed.
Yeah, I'll be doing that. And while you're waiting, don't forget to join Jules, Kelly and Sam on this week's FPL pod. They'll be looking ahead to game week 7 and they'll be discussing how Kelly's wild card played out. I know she was so close to Cole Palmer, but didn't, I don't think, go with him, but make sure you tune in to see her reaction to the Cole Palmer mega haul.
And if you haven't already joined the FPL Pod Mini League, the code is Q7YCO0.
And great talking to you, Praz. We'll see you next time.
Likewise, take care.